Hi, and welcome back to the Blue Morpho podcast. Hamilton Souther here, your host, and super excited today to have Dakota Apostolou here with us to share about Cohere, his initiative, Web3, what's going on in the world of crypto and AI. So Dakota, it's a pleasure to have you here on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Hamilton, for having me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your background that got you into kind of this initiative with Cohere.
Yeah. My background really started early on. I had speech impediments, and I was really drawn to architecture and how do I express myself through designing and building. And yeah, so like at the age of 12, I took the Frank Lloyd Wright Youth Camp program to start studying architecture formally. And then later, I actually got my master's degree from the Frank Lloyd Wright School of Architecture. And so all of my passion, like much of my passion has been, how do we provide and create beautiful containers where people are really encouraged and enabled and really, yeah, just have the space to do what is their calling. And so that's been one piece of what in my background that's led me to Cohere.
Amazing. So for the audience members who don't know what Cohere is, explain to them about it and how you decided to create it in the first place.
Cohere is a member-owned network of co-living communities, like conscious communities, where change makers who are working remotely can come together and co-create. And so we're building physical community co-living environments around the world. And so people can come together, co-live, co-create, figuring out how we amp each other's work and how we activate each other's work further. And yeah, having the containers to do that with the added benefit of being able to earn equity and actually gain ownership in this pool of real estate.
Amazing. So who are the kinds of change makers? Like if you were thinking, am I a change maker? How would you define them?
One of the things that's really important for us in change making is, you know, it's a little cliche perhaps, but if you want to change the world, change yourself. And so part of the Cohere and part of the whole point of the name is, how do we find coherence in ourselves? And then how do we do that as a collective? How do we actually come and generate a coherent field, if you will? And the more we can do that, the more we can create our own agreement reality and actually start to shift the equation and actually start to move the ball forward towards right livelihood and right relations with the earth. And so we're really calling together people who have that calling to stand up for humanity, stand up for right relations with Mother Earth and how we live on the planet. And their businesses or their foundations or their initiatives are oriented to those towards those ends.
In the development of the project, what are some of the hurdles you've had to, you know, face and even transcend to try to bring this vision into light?
Yeah, probably the biggest one is how to grow and evolve as a leader. And, you know, just how to continue to grow my self-awareness, you know, and really balancing this. The flow, just one of the analogies we have several analogies we default to. One is that we're building the banks of a river. We're not trying to tell the river how to flow, nor would we tell the oak tree how to grow. And as building inside the world environment with all these changing contexts all the time, it's been, I think the biggest challenge has been for me personally is, how do I embody just the right amount of structure without, and do so in such a way that I'm in my calm center and I'm in a space where I can help each person be in their genius and keep it organized and not slip into rushing or trying to make things happen. I could go on, but just really like the process of changing and evolving myself such that I can match the needs of the job and the needs of Cohere, this larger initiative.
What does a co-creating, co-living community hub or spot even look like?
So one of the things we see in the world right now is with the earth rebalancing, geopolitics, the crazy stock market, collapsing crypto, collapsing banks, the list goes on of the crazy things going on. And we view this as a golden opportunity for humanity to make some major leapfrogs and really just radically evolve. In order to do so, we believe that we need the spaces and the places for people to come into connection with one another. And so as we go, we've been developing what is really the ideal environment for us to bring people together. And then what is the right types of projects to acquire or build that best facilitate that? And that's an ever-going inquiry. We don't believe there's a one-size-fits-all, but we are honing in on some presets in places where people can really connect to the earth, or places where people can have peace and be connected to each other. In a small group size, typically 20 to 30 people seems to be a very kind of ideal sweet spot, where it's not too many people, but still has enough dynamism for the group and the cross-pollination to really to occur.
And what kind of link does Cohere have with crypto at all? And what do you see going on in the entire crypto space?
In my opinion, much of the Web3 and crypto space is a lot of fluff. And a lot of financializing that's kind of akin to Wall Street and kind of mimicking a lot of the fiat world, but without the military industrial complex backing anything. And so we really believe that Web3 is a potent technology and has embedded in it the opportunity to radically shift the game. What we're committed to in this space is, how do we build a token that is actually backed by real world assets? And many of the crypto tokens in the space do not have that. They're just, we issue a number of tokens. If people buy more tokens, the price goes up. If people pull their money out, the price goes down. And to me, that's very much just like too similar to gambling. We believe that now is a really potent time to use crypto, or better yet, blockchain, to provide the ability for anyone to invest in real estate and have liquidity and be able to sell their shares of pools of assets and actually have those shares, have those tokens backed by the new gold or the old gold, food, resilient buildings, water, with coherent community. That's what really inspires us inside of the Web3 space, is using the technology to build more real world assets that we really need to thrive in the world today.
In terms of creating a crypto token that's actually backed by real world assets, what do you go through? What do you have to do?
We've been researching this very, very heavily for a couple of years. So the way Cohere started is, we were working with a mentor of ours, Rennie Davis, who's kind of famous for being one of the Chicago Seven. We were working on the Foundation for Humanity, in building out a prototypical development in Southern Arizona near the biospheres to really show how do we build a community that's really integrating some of the best practices from the inner work all the way to next generation ag to architecture, the whole gamut. And he passed away unexpectedly, and that's what inspired us to start Cohere. And instead of building one, shiny village on the hill, we decided, how do we actually make an impact through slowly, slowly shifting some of the economic incentives and using crypto to actually build these assets? And so we went upon this search of, how do we do that in a way that's legal with the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission? Because what we saw early on is that if you're not compliant, that really limits quite a bit of what you can do. So after quite a bit of research, what we came to is tokenizing our safes. A safe is a type of contract that was invented by Y Combinator in 2009 or 10, I believe. And that's basically a simple agreement for future equity. It's one of the most standard ways to invest in a company today. And what we've done, or what we're using, are safes that are on blockchain. And that allows people to invest their time, their energy, their capital, even, land or assets, put them into equity or into ownership of the company, a Delaware C Corp. And because those safe notes are tokenized, people can buy and sell those, amongst each other and on an ever-growing secondary market. So that's one important way. A second way is tokenizing individual pieces of property or assets through fractional NFTs. And that's something that, we've been working on as well in many of our partner orgs. And then a third one are things like tokenizing foundations. And so what we've been up to is, what are the best tool sets to really allow us to move this ball forward, to help connect the existing lighthouses in the world, if you will, and then also to pool our resources together to build more of these innovation hubs, these co-living, co-working facilities, these conscious communities for change makers and still have the liquidity, have our money backed by those assets and actually be fungible.
When I first heard of Cohere, I resonated with the general message of it, that you were able to marry what seemed like very entrenched old world economics with very future thinking, new world concepts of utilizing new technology. And my personal feeling on Web3 is very similar to yours, which is that in the earliest phase of it, it's been used for really the simplest recreation of what is already the world of finance, and not really backed by the, you know, super industrialized military complex or backed by real world assets, which led to hyper volatility in many different ways and many different versions of what looked like Ponzi schemes. And I thought that it's ultimately the technology that matters, not the use of the technology or the early use of the technology. You see the same thing with Internet 1.0. Most of the early projects don't exist anymore. And now we have, you know, Internet whatever 0.0 we're on, that is this, you know, incredible technology and network. But one of the things I also really liked was how you were bringing together what seemed like real world asset networks with crypto networks and then human networks. So can you talk a little bit about the human network side of Cohere and how that operates?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important sources of capital that is really, unfortunately, underrepresented in the current economic system. And one way that gets expressed, let's say if we take the intentional community space, people come together, we build out a community, we're all co-living together permanently. And often in these types of communities, you have people who come and they work for decades and they building out the pool, building out the assets, you know, building out, let's say, a food forest or building out buildings, directly increasing the value of the property with no equity. So then some power dynamic shifts, and all of a sudden someone who's just, you know, spent 20 years putting in so much sweat equity has no equity, and now they need to leave. And then it can easily and often kind of festers into an unhealthy co-dynamic relationship. And so one of the things that's really important for us on the human capital side and the human network side is how do we actually honor and provide access to equity for people's contributions of the soft skills or of wisdom or of all these things that are normally not accounted for in our pretty reductionist, extractive, crony capitalistic system we have today. And so what that's allowed us to do, when we can compensate people in securities, in actual shares of Cohere for their human, for their contributions, that's not only fiat money, now that activates the human network in a way that beforehand wasn't, or was always having some kind of perverse counter incentives. And so one of our goals is to provide everyone the fruits of their labor, and especially wisdom. And this is so important for us because, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, you guys are a bunch of like 20 or 30 year olds or 40 year olds who just want to live in paradise. And it's like, we actually are trying to build a diverse polyculture where we have all backgrounds represented, especially the elders. And if we don't do that, then we're just going to make the same mistakes that people have already gone through that we could just learn from. And that's what's so important for us, to be able to represent all those contributions. That in turn activates much, much more of the human network, because now more people are inspired to plug in, as well as our sister networks who are doing maybe governance work or earth regenerative work or what have you.
The human network seems to have the ability to not only increase value on a single kind of idea, but it seems to increase value across all of the different ideas, especially when you can accelerate the movement through different pain points that organizations go through or projects go through as they're growing. How do you attract such a diverse polyculture of people to, you know, this kind of project?
Yeah, great question. It's something that we're discovering as we go. I mean, so far it's been very easy. The homing beacon is working, and we don't really do any paid marketing whatsoever. But the people who are inspired to come together and collectively to live together and test out properties and then pool our resources to build or acquire these and accelerate these movement of lighthouses, if you will, people are just coming together naturally. And one thing that something that we've been exploring that's really exciting is in Cohere, what we've been doing, right, is we've tokenized our equity. So anytime people contribute, they become an owner. Well, what if everybody did that with their business? What if everybody mimicked that structure? And all of a sudden, when people buy each other's services, they're actually investing in each other. And so, because for us, we see it very clearly. Like when everybody owns a share of Cohere and becomes a shareholder of Cohere, everyone has an incentive to grow the whole. We all own the commons. Now everyone has that financial incentive to take care of the commons. Well, what if we could actually do that with each other's businesses, where we all own, you know, a few percentage of each other's businesses, and now as a community, we all have an incentive to make sure everyone's successful in doing their right livelihood. And so those, I think there's some like really cool financial tools there or some technology tools. And then there's just the most fundamental human thing in the world of breaking bread. You know, like we've been in the impact space for a while, and it's like, go to all these weekend masterminds, talk about all the things you could do. But you know, who is it recently who said like, but what happens when you come to Monday morning? What happens? And that's what we want to foster, is when we bring people together for several weeks at a time to like months at a time, that's when we really find how we activate each other, because we're having those just raw human experiences and the most fundamental human experiences of kicking up a beautiful, you know, cooking a beautiful meal and hanging out and having that 2 a.m. conversation around the kitchen island. So it's a combination of new tools and like the most human fundamental thing in the world. Like, let's gather around the fire.
Yeah. Where in the arc of the project creation are you? What are your next steps?
So what we've done, the sequence that we've been building Cohere has three major phases. The first phase has been building out our membership pool and our founding membership of the people who have this shared vision of co-owning and co-building these regenerative hubs. The next phase we've been doing, but now we're moving into it more seriously or more consistently, I should say, is operating and living together as community in venues around the world. The third phase, in doing so, we're providing our members the opportunity to build coherence across the network, as well as connect to a place, in important places. And then our members as a community, we really connect to that property and kind of vet that property. Are these properties places we want to pool our resources and build, or pool our resources and acquire? And so we've been slowly building these phases, connect the people, come together and break bread and live in locations around the world, and pool our money to actually start to build and co-own and co-create these hubs. And that's the phase we're moving into. We're operating in Berlin for the summer and, you know, doing some great work there. And then Bali, Guatemala, Iquitos, and we'll continue to do that and continue to pool more and more funds together.
Yeah, kind of in the greater vision of this, where do you see locations existing?
There are some places that seem apparent and kind of the acupuncture points of the world, if you will. There's like, you know, like the Sacred Valley, the Valley of Longevity, Lake Atitlan, Lake Titicaca, like Ometepe, Crestone. You know, there's all these spaces around the world that just naturally have a gravitas and an energetic field, if you will. And so there are those places, but then also, I don't know how to quite explain it, but the right thing is always coming in at the right time. And our members are bringing in the properties as a community, and it's rather emergent. And so we have some biases, if you will, of what makes sense, but we're also just really allowing us to be guided in what wants to emerge.
And you know, right now, who are the ideal people to be participating in this project with you?
I would say anyone who is really motivated to actually start. Well, two things. Let me back up the most important. One, individuals who are inspired in doing the work to grow themselves, to grow their awareness, or to realize they're already perfect and they're already whole and complete and there's nothing you need to do and you're already there. But the people who are committed to, I really love the words of my late mentor, Rennie Davis, the people who are committed to being their authentic self, living their authentic self. Those types of individuals who then want to come together and build this next generation, if you will, of physical infrastructure. The ones who are like, okay, yes, all these crazy things are going on. We can see the tsunami on the horizon. Well, let's get together and do something about it. Let's actually build the things, the physical infrastructure, the lighthouses, the physical lighthouses, to accelerate our inner work by coming together. So we're not so much looking for the monks. We're looking for the people who are like, okay, I'm done being on the mountaintop. Now what?
Yeah. In terms of once this is all set up and operating and you have a number of locations, and I know you already have hundreds of members, but when it grows to potentially more than that, how do you envision, like, for someone who has no idea about this, what it would be like to live for a year inside Cohere? Where are the people? How do they move? How do they go to different locations? How does this kind of organize?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we're excited. We've been prototyping this now for several years and kind of testing as we go, because, anyone who's ever lived in a community setting knows the biggest problem are the people, So it's like, because we have to change ourselves, and living inside of a community is the accelerant for better or worse, one of the things is we don't know, what we're committed to is helping provide some of the riverbank so more of this energy can flow. What we see and where our hypotheses lead us to is that many of us are living as global citizens and are already popping around the world for chunks of time at a time, and typically for 3 to 6 months. And we actually see that trend accelerating. We see that as we raise our consciousness of, like, I'm only caring for myself, to I'm only caring for my family, only caring for my community, to a global consciousness of, like, let's actually take care of the spaceship. Let's actually live in right relations with, we are earthlings, let's live in right relations with Mother Earth. We see more of that consciousness growing. And so currently what's been happening are people come, they live, in a Cohere location for whatever makes sense for the visa. And yeah, it's a really kind of slow travel, if you will, in the game A world. And we see people that continue. People coming 3 to 6 months and then traveling to the next location. But in some instances, really laying roots, one of the things that I find oftentimes are people, many of our friends are like, let's get 20 of us together and build a community. And we believe, like, if you're going to build a village, before the village comes the intentional community. Before the intentional community comes a culture that needs to be built on trust. How do you build trust? Well, break bread. Don't go think that you're going to build a home, like, with somebody until you actually live with them for, like, 3 to 6 months. Like, really take the time to make sure that people are resonant with each other and then with the place. So eventually we see that more and more people want to establish permanent roots somewhere, and that's what we want to provide, but we don't want to jump the gun. This happens so many times. Let's take this one step at a time.
I think that, in the development of community, first I'm assuming that somebody who really gets involved with Cohere kind of stays in Cohere and goes from different Cohere locations to other Cohere locations. And it would make sense to me that certain locations would ultimately lend better to certain kinds of projects and certain skill sets that a person has, also language capacities and the way they resonate with the local culture of ultimately where they're staying. And so it makes sense to me that somebody would frequent one location more than another and, as you say, build roots there and also really get into the kind of projects that are being developed there. One of the things that's really interesting to me about this is the idea of project development and really the value of the intellectual property of these people coming together to, as you say, break bread, but then in the conversations also help each other problem solve, create projects. Many of these people are digital nomads, and so they're accessing internet as the means of implementing their ideas and their projects. And then also the building of the value of the physical locations. And so, from that, I'm kind of wondering, in the long run, do you see projects of Cohere that root in a certain location and then get built by the aspects of the collective there? Does it all become a free flow as well? How do you guys envision this, like, growing and building out?
Like, for us, we really love this term polyculture. because we're not looking to have, when people oftentimes in the world, it's like, well, what is the coherent experience? And like, and there's a little bit of a pull of like this kind of Marriott thing, like anywhere, you, any Marriott you go to is going to be the same mediocre experience and, or whatever this, it could be the same great experience or, but what we're after is how do we actually create an experience that's grounded with the local place, that is place-based. And inherently, every location is going to have their own dynamism and its own magic. And like you were saying, I it's going to have a different soil. It's going to sprout different things. And so for us, it's really more the values that will bring us together. And the other thing is like, we, it occurs to me that we're, of course, I think it's rather apparent that we are in an era of radical transformation of everything, more so perhaps than ever before in human history. And so the context of the world is so radically shifting. And one thing seems pretty consistent, that we're always going to need food, water, resilient housing, and coherent community. That feels like pretty solid, like we're always going to need that. And so, yeah, the, I think there's, if we really stay with the core foundations of like, how do we take care of right relations with ourselves and our livelihoods and with each other, that no matter what, that's our base. And then what naturally wants to emerge is just going to be location dependent, but also trust dependent. Because if we can trust each other, that's when we figure out how to activate each other into the next level. And that's how we figure out like, oh my gosh, you're doing this and we can plug that into this. And we really kind of think of like the Greek federation, the Greek city states. You know, each city state had its own focus, but there was less separation. You know, there's ease of trade and commerce. And that's kind of like been an analogy we really like to use.
You mentioned that there's a huge disrupt taking place, and I'm in agreement with that. I think this is the largest disrupt in history, literally all of human history. And it's ultimately bifurcating between what are machines and what are people. And people maybe no longer even being really connected so much to the machines. Like, people have been making machines now for hundreds of years, but it seems to be that the machines are in essence growing a life of their own, including different kinds of automation. And it has brought up a lot of question around, well, what do people become in the face of the nature of this disrupt? And then how do we ultimately coexist? How are you seeing the nature of this artificial intelligence and expansion of automation and technology?
I've always liked this concept that the brain is already an artificial intelligence. Like, we have our awareness. Like, okay, so the way I view the world is we have our awareness, and our awareness or awareness unit or whatever you want to call it is inside of our body. And our body also has its own consciousness and also has its own intuition. And then we have the brain that is this like incredible mechanism to keep us stimulated and to keep us awake. And fear is pretty amazing at keeping you awake. Like, if you're in a fearful state, you're not falling asleep, you know? So like it stimulates the awareness. And in that vein, it occurs to me that as humans, as we get inundated in artificial intelligence and all this crazy evolution that's occurring to around us, then the intuition in like the deep knowingness in like these deeper layers of self naturally rise to the surface. Because like evolution is really slow until the pressure is on. And right now, like the earth is rebalancing and it's the technology is going, everything is just like pressurizing. So now it seems now is the time that we make the leap and we actually evolve our awareness and activate all these latent potentials that we have that are just wildly more potent than any AI. That's how it occurs to me.
AI is a tool that's going to be used really where the technology most applies. And it seems to me that early on, the place where it most applies is in mega civilizations and mega cultures that, you know, currently exist, like what we call the Western developed world or megalopolises, et cetera. And it's going to also disrupt very quickly manufacturing and big ag and, you know, very large industries. But what it's made me think is that there's a lot of people, as the pressure inside those environments, even suburbia changes, may not have the same desire to live within those confines as they did before. They might find that that entire construct of thought and culture of living in those environments ultimately shifts. And it moves to a point where it becomes uncomfortable instead of comfortable. It becomes maybe more of the negatives of it than what people would have originally thought as some of the positives of it. And I thought that this great pressure that you're talking about could make an enormous, like, community-oriented or social pressure that could actually create a great dispersion of new models and new ways of thinking about what it is to live in community, to be a community. I mean, it seems like, you know, we've had this idea of a small town or village forming, or like a tribal area forming into a small village and then a town growing to a point that becomes a small city, and then a city growing until it becomes something much larger, like a metropolis. And most people in the Western developed world fitting within that to some degree. You know, they're, even if they're out in farmland, there's still a small town around that farming area. But it really seems to me like this is an opportunity where technology may push on us evolutionarily so strong, so fast, that a lot of people look for literally new models to describe the idea of living. And so I wondered how you see that, having, you know, interacted with so many people that are already looking for new models, and how that could potentially fit into Cohere.
Yeah, I think it's just everything is accelerating. And I think one of them is, of course, the changing of the climate and the intensification of all weather. And that piece, it's like you have all of these pressures building up at once, and more, like, let's say, like in the United States as an example, like the democracy itself in the United States is teetering on the edge. And so you have this system, you know, like the neoliberal economic order, and that's, you know, housed and cemented with the American version of democracy. And the entire system is cracking like it's never cracked before. And, you know, I think what's occurring is then you have many people in the stereotypical suburban box in the repeated house, right? It's such a cliche at this point. And now people are in those boxes. And I think COVID really accelerated this. Like, here I am with no self-sufficiency whatsoever, like none. And my only lifeline is through this economic model that I'm more and more seeing has made everyone into a bee. You know, we're all bees doing the exact same thing, and it's completely disconnected people from right livelihood. And that's, I think that AI and the acceleration of the advanced technologies is just turbocharging that even more. And then you have the collapse of governments as we know it. And then you have the collapse of the macroeconomic system. And then you have climate change and, like, unfortunately, the next worst fire, the next worst hurricane. And people already are like, how the hell do I opt out of this world? How do I actually build this other thing? Well, we can't do it by putting our heads in the sand, and we can't do it by fighting anything. We actually only do it, it occurs to me at least, coming into coherence with ourselves, moving beyond the fear, and then coming together as a community and saying, okay, now what? And I think that's going to happen a lot more in the coming years.
Yeah, there's, you know, this bipolar argument that we get presented, which I've never really liked, and I've never really felt like I fit into, you know, it seemed like just such a narrow box that it's this or that, like, if everything collapses, then we all suffer because of it. But I don't think that that's really the way evolution works. I think evolution is much more like the way you see a tree, where there's a direction and then a branch branches off and another branch goes this way and another branch goes that way, and they're not all the same size. I think we see that same kind of concept with the flow of a river, that ultimately it takes many different paths. And so I think as these pressures take place, and I agree with you that the macro system is showing stress cracks. It's showing fractures all over the place. I think really underneath the weight of extreme greed by a very small percentage of people that are really exacerbating and accelerating the nature of that stress, that ultimately what comes from it is tremendous creativity, because the life force within us wants to continue. And the social culture of that life force is really looking for what we think of as a stable life, I think, or a better life. And I've questioned, at which point do people start to make new choices and new decisions and start to get really creative about it. And I came up with the idea, I coined sort of the phrase for myself called the third. Instead of this or that, there's some other option. It's just the third option. I don't know what it is yet because I've only been presented this or that. But what it's showing me in this case is that Cohere is providing a notion of one of those third options, which is, here's a way where you can live within a community, a collective ownership, but it's not divorced from the other systems, and it's also not fully embroiled in the other systems. There's this hybridization that's taking place that is merging, I think, really three core forms of technology. One, you know, the idea of assets and real estate and the value of them and the way that you can improve them, especially in a sustainable way and an impact-oriented way and something that's good for the planet. And then the idea of these new technologies like Web3 and the tokenization of value, which then allows people a co-ownership model that didn't exist before. And then the idea of the community itself having a significant value that just could otherwise not be monetized. There's no way to actually ultimately embrace that. And I see that that is sort of maybe one of the first models I've seen that's trying to approach a solution for the living environment, the well-being of the physical body, the well-being of our basic necessities, and also a form of inclusion in the economic markets that would otherwise be excluded from. Do you think the technology and the expansion of that technology is ultimately helpful to your model?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. It gives us, yeah, just new tool sets that we can build new things with in the financial technology space that, and it's interesting at the end of the day, how much does any of that matter? You know, it does. And then it also just comes down to trust, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. And so it's like what I really love about the new financial technology is that inside of Web3, it's allowing us to use the financialization tools that were only ever before used by Wall Street types and actually have everyone get the benefit of that. And I think that's what is so exciting as a mobilizing force in this, kind of the fintech space.
That's, I think, a really interesting point, that is democratizing access to tools that were otherwise held in very specific verticals of the economy. When you guys have looked at other kinds of models, how have you thought of embracing, like you said, fractional NFTs, these other kinds of technologies ultimately into the model?
Well, it is such a Cambrian explosion right now of innovation in the space. I mean, there's so many amazing sister orgs that are just doing great work. Awasa out in Portugal with Traditional Dream Factory, I love their model quite a bit. I just spoke with a group today in Brazil with something called MobiCoin, where they're doing fractional NFTs of tiny homes. And there's just, for us, one of the things that we're really adamant about is the more the merrier. You know, like this idea that like we're going to outcompete another group who's better figuring it out. It's like mixing the whole point. Like there is a superordinate goal. And if you're familiar with this research around how do you get gang members collaborating in different gangs, you give them a bigger issue to deal with. It's like when the aliens invade, everybody's on the same side. And right now, it would be really wise as a humanity if we realize there's a tsunami on the horizon. Let's get our act together and all collaborate. And it doesn't matter who's got their name on whatever. If we're figuring out the best new financial or whatever, who cares? So our model has always been like, anytime we can support our sister orgs, great. If they're successful, we're more successful. And then if we can swap tokens with each other, or if we can index our tokens together, like meaning like we take the tokens Cohere has with others and we bundle those together, and then that starts to build a whole new asset class. Wow. Now we can really, really turbocharge each other. And so that's our general MO is like, and not everyone's super collaborative. There's a lot of people who say they're collaborative and then wanting to be like the innovative one. And maybe we fall into that too at times, but our intention is just always, how do we just be of service to the meta network and accelerate all the movements collectively?
I think you have a difficulty in the shifting of all aspects of culture at the same time. And so it's easy to say that you want to be really collaborative, but then you're also presented all the time with ideas of like, well, what's your moat and how do you protect yourself as a business? And what happens if a lot of other people come and copy you? And so there's a lot of ideology around projects and for-profit movements that ultimately kind of all of a sudden find themselves in that war of competition. And it's hard to shift all of those aspects and ideologies all at once. But what I really like about this idea of all the projects that you mentioned is that it really looks to me like blue ocean, because they're going into a space that doesn't yet actually exist in the form that they're innovating into. And so it seems to me that it leaves room for there to be a tremendous amount of collaboration in an idea of how you actually build out that space. Because it sounds to me like an entire new vertical. Like when we talk about this and I think of it in my mind, so on a single project base, I think of all the different things that could be difficult for that project to gain the traction to make it. But then I also like to think that these models are going to make it. And ultimately, it provides an entire new concept for living, for community living. It's like decentralizing towns. It's decentralizing resorts. It's decentralizing what people used to do and call vacation. It's also decentralizing work. It's decentralizing intelligence and IP. And it's bringing it under a cohesive or coherent umbrella that gives it culture, that gives it shape and gives it form. And to me, it looks like, I mean, when I see like in my mind, the geometry of the blockchain over the earth, it looks like that to me though, but of different groups trying to build out what looks like the next generation civilization, which is no longer defined by, you know, national borders, but it doesn't disrupt them. Like you say, you stay in an area for a period of time that's within the legal limits of the places where you're staying, et cetera. But I've always questioned like, you know, what's the next evolution for the planet? Because the model that I was brought up in, I was told while I was being brought up in it that it's not sustainable. And all that means to me, that's not a positive or a negative. It just means it's got to change at some point. And so we don't know how it's going to change. And now, you know, we're hearing of models like your model with Cohere that is a representation of that change. And so it's, in my mind, perfectly acceptable that it's very early in the space. And it's figuring it out as it goes, because it's also defining the space. You know, when you hear all of that, what do you think?
Yeah, it just really fills me with joy, man. I really, it's like it's such an exciting time to be alive, because we do have the opportunity to trailblaze. And all of these orgs that are committed and doing incredible work day in, day out are doing that. And if we, even if these orgs aren't actually collaborating, we're all connected inside of this groundswell in this overall movement that's occurring, this evolutionary movement. And I don't know, man, it's like really touches me that to just have the opportunity to, you know, contribute our little part into this and do what we can to help activate whatever we can. And because, what more is there to do than activate ourselves and help do what we can to help activate humanity to take that next leap? And I don't know, I'm really touched by having the opportunity to be part of this collective movement in this little way that we are. And it just feels really cool.
How ultimately do families fit in and, you know, multiple generations fit into this kind of a model?
It's interesting. I grew up traveling around the world quite a bit. And my mother is very much opposed to this idea that, well, she was actually, I should say, very into the idea that you get experience, you get, what's the saying? Wisdom comes from experience. So you get a diversity of experience. And so I grew up in many parts of the world. And I think that I'm at an age in my life where I'm starting to think about family as well, and something that very much excites me in the coming years. And it's how do we build these hubs where people have the choice to go deep and root, but also have the ability to move. But furthermore, even if you don't move, you get the financial upside of the entire commons. That's what we're really after. Is like, I can own my house, and financially the value of my house can go up or down, And I'm riding that line. And most people don't own their houses. The bank owns their houses, and maybe one day they get to pay it off. But what if we actually co-own a global pool of real estate? And as we grow the value of that pool, everyone's value goes up commensurately. And since the real estate is one of the best stores of value, you don't need that liquidity all the time. You can keep the value tied into that real estate, but your share value is still going up. And you can lean against that value far more easily. And so that's what starts to become really exciting in terms of changing the game of the fundamental economic drive that is currently, if I take the most, I get ahead. Or if I undercut the next guy the most, I get ahead. Inside of what we're after and what we're like obsessed with building is an economic model where if I steward the land, your personal financial value goes up directly. And if you help the other guy, the more you help the other guy, the more your financial standing goes up. That's what we're after. And we believe that if we don't shift that, then we're going to be fighting an uphill battle. But if we can shift that, which we can in some very simple ways, then for those who want to choose that system, we can turbocharge our financial standing and then show others, why don't you come join us? Why don't you opt out of the rat race and just come join us and enter a race to build the best and healthiest planet we can possibly imagine? Let's do that.
I think when I envision the model that is the rat race and sort of the great competition, it seems like people trying to climb up over each other to get to the top, only to get ultimately pulled down. And so it seems like there's, for one winner, there's all of these other people that just aren't winning as much. And so instead of there being aligned values, it sounds to me like there's a misalignment ultimately in value, even from the people that you're closest with. And one of the reasons why I wasn't interested in getting involved in the corporate world when I was growing up was because I heard that everyone's vying for your job, and climbing the corporate ladder is kind of a difficult process, not just one based on the nature of your own merits. How in Cohere do you guys see the alignment of values, and how do you ultimately create that?
Something that it's ever developing. And one example of this is, how do we compensate, for instance, for somebody? A common question in this sense is, if someone's contributing something, what do we compensate them? And currently what we're doing is just, what is your standard market rate for that type of job? Now, that's not perfect, because there's all sorts of imbalances in what we value in society currently because of the misaligned economic incentives. But right now, what we're doing inside of Cohere is, you contribute value, we're going to provide value that's basically on average of what you would get if you're being paid in fiat. We'll pay you that in equity. And so that's one way we're doing that, but way more to figure out in how we fine tune these systems. The thing that's really exciting to me right now that we've been really getting into is, and we'll be really diving into this in Berlin, is, I was kind of noting this earlier, is like, a friend of ours, Emmanuel, was sharing this. He's got a really cool company called Fractile, and he was sharing this research at a conference that some friends were hosting called Protopia. And he was sharing this research that when companies co-own 1% of each other, just 1%, I believe the number was a 10% increase on their profitability. That small 1% makes a huge difference. And so when we can start to co-invest in each other and co-own the collective and co-own each other's initiatives, then that has such a crazy flywheel effect. And so that's another example. So I'm not quite sure if I'm answering your question, but these are things that we're constantly in the exploration of how do we create these economic flywheels and positive feedback loops.
And all of these things, it sounds to me like there's a tremendous amount of new thinking going on, new imagining and new modeling. And, you know, Blue Morpho has been a mover and real pioneer in the plant medicine movement. Where in your own experience has plant medicines and visionary experiences come into play, and have they influenced how you guys have thought about Cohere?
Yeah, in particular key moments, that's always been something I've really honored with the plant medicine world. For me, plant medicine is, I don't know. For me, like, I need like a few years between every time I sit with plant medicine to actually integrate the teachings. And the way that's, I mean, so much for Cohere to me is, it's like everything in the world for me is, it's a reflection of my own inner state. And so I find that plant medicine has been an extremely important set of milestones in my life when I've been ready to like actually sit down in ceremony and really go deep into that work. And that has always correlated at different breakthrough moments in the process of building this. And so, yeah, but it's hard to say exactly how that reflects into the building of the company, because it's so much about, you know, shift your awareness in some way, and then everything in the world shifts around you, including a company or initiative you're building.
Take me through like one of these big plant medicine experiences for you. You know, what kind of plant medicine? What happened in terms of the experience? What was it like?
Yeah, let's see. Let's see a good one. I had one where a dear friend and investor, before he decided to invest, was like, "Okay, you guys need to meet my medicine woman." We're like, "Okay, great." So we went down to Costa Rica to sit with his medicine woman, and had quite a potent experience. And going into it, you know, I have a fast metabolism, and so I was sitting with the shaman, I was like, "Okay, I only need a little bit. Like, I don't need to go too deep. My body metabolizes very quickly." And her response was, honey, you need a big dose. And so she like went to the bottom of the barrel. It's like gave me this monster cup. And I was like, okay, we're going to do this. Okay. And what was so magical was the thing that really popped in for me was the idea that I could have concern about anything was so ridiculously comical that I just went into the most immense state of joy and laughter. And I laughed for, you know, hours straight, like just nonstop laughter, that the infinite eternal beings that we are, to actually have an idea that there could be fear or concern about anything is just the most ridiculous thing in the world. And that was our kind of the opening to our first investment that really got Cohere going. That was the seed capital to make all of this possible. And it was just such a potent experience to really step into this journey of, from that place of joy, which I cannot say at all I am able to keep. Like, there's rarely a day that goes by that I don't fall into fear at some point in the day. And the thing that's been most important for me right now is like to recognize that, of course, that is the whole freaking point. Like, the whole point is that there's no destination. It's that moment, every moment choice to come to be in that center, to recognize we're always in our center. There is no separation. The separation is the illusion. Like, we're already there. Like, and so, anyway, I say that one is probably the most potent as it reflects the Cohere, because it was at the inception point of creating it.
Oh, it's beautiful. In terms of your visionary experiences, have you had any experiences that you felt were like direct encounters with oneness or source or divinity, or, you know, that word that people don't like to use?
Yeah. I mean, oh my gosh. Like, yeah. Like every single time, like really, like, I think it occurs to me that it's inside of that awareness. Like it still comes back. It comes down to me. The way it occurs for me is that I'm able to see the illusion of separation. And inside of seeing that illusion, then I can actually be fully in my authentic self. And then that, in my experience, that then allows me to actually have an experience of what it means to be in my profound wholeness. And so it's like that, it's like looking behind the veil, but in a feeling state of like, that's right. This is what we are. And I think that's what I mean, like processing the experience. I don't mean an intellectualization side, but I mean more of like, how do I then take that, the experiential awareness and flavor into my daily morning practice, into my daily evening practice? And it's like, oh, that's right. I am already that. Like, I am actually that infinite eternal already. And so that's, you know, that's what always comes up every time I sit, is like, oh yeah, remembering who I am is this the number one theme. It's always this thing.
That's amazing. You mentioned, you know, a year or two to be able to fully integrate plant medicine experiences. And I really appreciate that vocalization of that awareness that it takes that long. I was in a chat group this morning and people who've recently participated in ayahuasca ceremonies with me were describing their first couple months of integration. And they're in a phase now of it where they're starting to realize that many, like hundreds of subtle changes have occurred. But while they went through those subtle changes, they also experienced great mental shifts in terms of how they thought about it and were processing their experience. And I was thinking to myself today that this is just another phase of that understanding of the integration. And that when you take a visionary plant, you kind of shake up the entirety of that consciousness. It changes the patternings of what you understood as like your normal everyday thinking and the way that you are processing information. And that it actually takes a very long time to go through all of the different stages of that process to ultimately come to a new cohesive understanding of who you are in reality and how much reality has shifted. Through that process, I mean, over a course of a year, you mentioned a morning routine and a evening routine. I think it's unbelievably important that people have these kinds of practices in their life. And so I just wondered if you could share what aspects of your routine that you use to be able to stay grounded and continue going forward.
One of the very important ones for me is, it's so funny, like the slow, I feel like I'm very slow to integrate things. Like, like there's the intellectual awareness of like, oh, okay. And even experiential awareness, but then to actually grok that into my being has been for me a very slow process. Maybe that's the case with everybody. I can only speak for myself. But one of the key practices I really have been using for some years is when I first wake up is to set my energy for the day. And I am one of my archetypes, like using the Enneagram archetyping, I'm an achiever, right? So one of my dominant ego patterns is like, I gotta achieve. And so I'll often wake up and be like, oh, I gotta go. And so one of the things that's been really potent is to stop and center in the morning and just like chill out, breathe. Then I'll typically wake up and I'll oscillate between meditation and or working out and then meditating. And right now I kind of been testing both of these because I go through these cycles of different phases where when I live in different locations, the exercise routine shifts by the temperature. So typically I'll wake up and exercise and do like a really good 45 minute exercise and really get in my body. And then I'll sit on the earth. And then a couple practices I really enjoy is sending my grounding rod, like sending my energy down out my spine into the ground, like roots sinking into the earth, and then sending like my life energy into the earth while inviting her energy, the energy of innocence, up through my being and then down my biofield, and then looping those and then taking my authentic energy, my authentic self energy, and then down. And then I'll get these two loops of energy going. And then with that, then I'll do a series of like different exercises around like making sure my chakras are open and just all the normal exercises. And then just working on quieting the brain. I'll do that. There's a different series of focus that I'll go through like in different cycles. But yeah, long and short of it is I'll do different types of meditations, exercise, and then set my intention for the day, whatever the awareness is for the day. And lately I've been studying the Mayan astrology and using that system to really key me into those calendars with every day having a different activation, a typology. And that's been a major practice for the last year or so. And so then each of those archetypes tend to have a lesson for the day. And then I'll bring that into my awareness and bring that into the subconscious. So that's generally my morning practice.
Oh, amazing. Thanks for sharing that. What would be some final conclusion thoughts that you would like to share or anything that you would like to impart on our listeners?
Yeah, it's my joy and appreciation for this, the community that's come together, that's come together, especially around your work, around how we use this ancient technology to further accelerate our collective work. And I think you and the community you've been building are really at the cutting edge of what it means to really be a grounded human in the world today, and really honoring our lineage and honoring these ancient technologies, if you will, to grow ourselves. And it inspires me deeply that there's this growing community of people being like, oh, hell yeah, we're going to use these tools. Like, oh my gosh, and let's use these tools responsibly, and let's come together and share the wisdom that we're all gathering as a community. And that, I just would, yeah, I'll leave this like my appreciation and gratitude, because that work that your community is doing in this larger community is shifting the world. It is shifting the collective unconscious. It's bringing hope into the world. And it's allowing us to step out of the programming. And it directly affects my life. And so I'm just thankful, really thankful.
That's amazing for sharing that. Thank you so much. Where can people find you? How can they learn more about Cohere?
Cohere.network is our website. And that's probably the best place. And then my name, Dakota, Dakotah, at cohere.network is my email. And yeah, anyone who feels called to join a community that wants to come together and explore how we live in coherence and funnel our resources to co-own and co-build these regenerative community hubs around the world, that's what we're calling in. So if you feel called or inspired to be part of a group doing that, we really welcome.
Amazing. Dakota, thank you so much for being here with me on the Blue Morpho podcast. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. I look forward to many more. And as Cohere develops, I'd love to have you back on the podcast more to talk about these co-living hubs and how they're all coming together. So thank you so much.